I was just a heavy drinker. And like I assumed were so many others around me. It started to affect me in lots of ways that I didn't even understand or realize. Lethargy. I had the blues a lot and high level of anxiety. I had chronic insomnia, didn't sleep for about 14 years properly. The weight gain that I couldn't quite get rid of. And it's not just the calories I was intaking. It was the fact that alcohol killed my motivation, killed my drive, killed my capacity to dedicate myself to a proper nutritional diet. I was your typical case study of somebody who was just drinking too much. Highly functioning, had three kids. Marriage was okay. Nothing's really fantastic when you're drinking a lot. My husband was drinking a lot as well. So as you can imagine, the situations we got ourselves in, what with ridiculous arguments and unnecessary bickering constantly, because a lot of it was all fueled by booze.
Yeah.
And that's where I was at. I was in a very dark place and I didn't even know it.
Welcome to the Tribe. This is your weekly podcast from Tribe Sober. Whether you're already sober, striving to be sober, or just plain sober curious, you need a tribe. You need a tribe because it's so hard to do this alone. You need a tribe because you need support. And that's where we come in. Here at Tribe Sober, we've got your back. Here at Tribe Sober, we have people at all stages of the journey, all helping each other to stay on track. On this podcast, we've got recovery stories to inspire you, experts to inform you, and plenty of advice on how to ditch the drink and change your life. So here's your host, Tribe Leader Janet Gorond.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Tribe Sober Podcast, episode 207. My name is Janet Gorond. I'm the founder of Tribe Sober, and I'm your host for this podcast. Here at Tribe Sober, we help people to change their relationship with alcohol and then to go on and actually thrive in their alcohol-free lives. And over the last 8 years, we've helped thousands of people to do just that. And we created Tribe Sober because we know from experience that it's really hard to change your drinking habits alone. Social norms are so powerful, and that's why you need to find a new tribe for this life-changing journey. Because your family tribe will tell you to just cut down a bit, and your drinking buddy tribe will tell you not to be so boring. Whereas Tribe Sober will connect you with other people on the same path. Other people who will understand and support you. Other people who understand the struggle. Other people who've been just where you are now. So at Tribe Sober, we're all about community. It's a community where everyone strives for an alcohol-free lifestyle, and many of our members are already thriving in their sobriety and inspiring others. Each week, we feature a community voice, just to give you a flavour of the awesomeness of our tribe.
The benefits obviously started for me. It wasn't just after 66 days. I was just so relieved to just be alert, properly alert and energized again for not just for 1 or 2 days, but for many days, like every day. And because, I mean, like weekends, the thing is, like I've said before, I don't get headaches, or in fact, I never get headaches. If I do get a headache, then I'm seriously ill. So I was just always tired. I didn't want to do anything. Oh, I go outside. Like, kids are going to time it out. But for the first time in a while, I actually had energy to do stuff and to be excited about doing stuff.
So if you'd like to join our warm and welcoming community, just go to tribesober.com and hit join our tribe. And just in case you missed our sober bus, which left town on the 20th of March for a 66-day alcohol-free challenge, you can still buy a late ticket. We had so many inquiries from people who'd missed the departure date that we decided to keep the challenge open until the end of the month. So sign up today and you can still join the bus and get your 66 days of community and online support. Today's guest is an Irish lady called Niamh, who stopped drinking and started walking 4 years ago. What an inspiration she is. I began our conversation by asking Niamh to introduce herself.
I live in Spain. I live on the Mediterranean coast, the Valencian community in just a really special part of Spain. In fact, all of Spain is special. I'm originally Irish. I moved here 20 years ago because the whole rat race environment, that whole economically driven climate, it wasn't doing it for me. And I was doing well. I had a good salary. I had a nice job. I had a nice house. I had the car. I had the house with lots of things in it. But I wasn't feeling very comfortable in my skin because I just wasn't happy. And I realized very early, I think I was lucky, I realized very early that material thing didn't serve me and didn't fill me up. It was quite a soulless life because of all the materialistic things not giving me joy. And I packed up a couple of suitcases and with no real plan, no career lined up, I left everything behind. So I left behind my security and my career and I headed for the hills, for the sunny hills.
I have a similar story, although I'm older than you, so I was approaching that age when I could retire. But I came here to Cape Town on holiday and really 20 years ago and decided to stay because I was really drained and fed up with corporate life and having all the stuff. But I knew that I could manage without the stuff if I had to. So
I think that's the fundamental realization.
Yeah.
It boils down to courage in being able to do something like this, because I think we're not alone. So many people will listen to your story and my story and think, how did you do that? How could you do that?
Yeah.
So was it bravery? Was it stupidity? I don't know, but it worked out really well. I suppose if there's other people in the same situation wondering if they could ever possibly could, yeah, you can.
Absolutely. They can always go back.
Exactly. You can always go back.
It's a bit like drinking. I say to people, if you don't like being sober, you can always start drinking again, but give it a year and see what you think.
I think that's the perfect way of suggesting it. Although I'd say, no, don't go back. Even if after a year you have a bit of a situation where you feel it's time to go back, try your best not to.
Yeah.
It's very hard when you go back to ever get out of it again, I imagine.
Yeah. I meet a lot of people that have clocked up a year, even 2 years of sobriety somehow, and they've gone back to drinking. But interestingly, they always want to go back to being sober. They talk nostalgically about it and they say, oh, it was awesome. Felt so good. I had so much energy.
Yeah.
But usually they've been hit by that. Oh, I'm sure I can have the odd drink now. And then it goes downhill.
And I think the novelty second time around, that fun you have the first time around, the challenge of it, the motivation that you need to dig deep to find, all those things first time around, there's something quite joyous in all of that, even though it's really hard.
Yeah.
But second time round, the novelty's worn off.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tougher second time round to give up.
Good point. So let's dive into your drinking story, please, Niamh. Did you start drinking at a young age?
I suppose I did. I dabbled in it as a teenager, as most do, the whole coming of age, 14, 15, when you start to experiment. Loved it. It gave me huge confidence. Although I imagine if I looked back at that young teenager falling around in a disco or behaving badly, I would not be overly impressed. But at that time, I thought it was great. It wasn't really a huge part of my teen life. But then I realized that I was drinking with my parents. That was very interesting in hindsight, looking back on that. And it's something I really am very cautious of today. Because I used to go to the pub with my parents, 16, 17, and drink with them. So I'm very cautious of entertaining that type of behavior with my children.
Mm-hmm.
So I do things like I hike with them, I holiday with them, I fish with them.
Nice.
I do more productive, wholesome things. Wasn't my parents' fault. That was just the culture. It was what we did. And we had great fun down the pub together. And that was where we bonded and connected and talked about life and what was going on in the world. But equally now, I can do that with my kids while hiking or outdoors or in a different environment. I suppose then I became like that middle lane drinker, glass of wine after work, very much required and desired. After a long day's work, you needed the glass of wine, which maybe was half a bottle of wine, and a good old binge on a Friday after work, that blotto drinking. where all types of chaos and mistakes would ensue. But again, nothing unusual, nothing that's not socially unacceptable. Everybody's having their glass of wine or more after work, and everybody's going and having a binge drink at the weekend. At least that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I assumed that everybody was doing that. Now that the wine goggles are on, I can see that not everybody does that, actually. There's an awful lot of people don't binge drink on a Friday or binge drink at a party.
But we hang out with people that do.
I did. I was hanging out with people that do, and I thought it was the norm. And it is the norm for many, but it's not the norm for everybody.
No.
This was a massive eye-opener for me later on when I moved away from alcohol, when I realized there are a huge proportion of people that aren't heavy drinkers, crazy drinkers, drinking into blackout drinkers, drinking every day after work to ease the stress. There are a lot, but not everyone. So that was something that was a real eye-opener for me. I suppose my drinking would have got a little bit heavier, as it does, because you need a little bit more, because your tolerance levels goes up and up. Yeah, so I suppose my drinking level would have increased as my capacity for it increased. My ability to drink more, my tolerance level went up. Never worried about that. Again, it's the norm. And then kids came along. And so there's another reason to drink.
Mommy juice.
Yeah, I was all those cliches. The hardest job in the world is to have toddlers. And therefore, the first thing we do when we're there down to bed is grab a drink. Now, having said all that, my three children were born in Spain.
Okay.
And the drinking culture in Spain, the expat drinking culture in Spain is very different. It's more acceptable to drink at all times of the day. Living in Spain, it being so much cheaper, so much more accessible, and somehow socially more acceptable amongst my peers,
yeah,
it would have increased even further. I work as a singer, so I would have been in an environment singing in bars and clubs and at festivals, things like that. Drink is just readily available, free. And of course, there was the whole question of Dutch courage. I couldn't possibly get on stage without a glass of wine beforehand. So it's everywhere. It was everywhere for me. And it was intrinsically part of my life, part of my day, part of who I was, part of my being, part of my identity, all of that, just so many other people. But it started to get more and more. And I never questioned whether I was an alcoholic. I don't really use that term. I think it's too broad spectrum. I was just a heavy drinker. And like I assumed were so many others around me. It started to affect me in lots of ways that I didn't even understand or realize. Lethargy. I had the blues a lot and high level of anxiety. I had chronic insomnia. Didn't sleep for about 14 years properly. The weight gain that I couldn't quite get rid of. And it's not just the calories I was intaking. It was the fact that alcohol killed my motivation,
yeah,
killed my drive, killed my capacity to dedicate myself to a proper nutritional diet. I was your typical case study of somebody who was just drinking too much. Highly functioning, had three kids. Marriage was okay. Nothing's really fantastic when you're drinking a lot. My husband was drinking a lot as well. So as you can imagine, the situations we got ourselves in, what with ridiculous arguments and unnecessary bickering constantly, because a lot of it was all fueled by booze.
Yeah.
And that's where I was at. I was in a very dark place and I didn't even know it.
Yeah. So when did I start having niggly little thoughts like I did a long time before I stopped, but you get these thoughts, oh, maybe I should do something about my drinking, but you never actually got round to it. Did you get that voice in your head at some
niggling,
point?
Niggling.
Niggling, yeah.
But when you're living life at half mast and not fully properly functioning or having to use so much emotional energy to get through the day, there's not an awful lot of time to really address the situation or think properly about it. And so these thoughts would pop into my mind, but I really don't think I had the mental ability to deal with them. Of course, I knew I was drinking too much. I wasn't stupid, but it had a tight hold on me. And it was necessary. It was necessary for my stress relief. It was a necessary reward at the end of the day, I thought. So What happened was I went to the doctor on various occasions. I must have a thyroid problem because I can't lose weight. All this carry on. Do you know the doctors never questioned my drinking? They never discussed my drinking, how much I was drinking. Looking back, I find that absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, me too.
To be honest, yeah. That they never said to me, could you please stop drinking for a month and let's see how your weight is or let's see how you're feeling about things. This thing called 1 year no beer had been popping up on my Facebook timeline, sending me little messages. It's all that. Oh, you know. And I decided very simply that I wanted to lose some weight. I was fed up getting on stage, being absolutely miserable with the way I looked, not being able to fit in my clothes, feeling uncomfortable, feeling self-conscious. I wasn't massively overweight, but I was a lot bigger than I was comfortable with. Everything wobbled and I didn't like it anymore. And I hadn't liked it for a very long time. So what I decided to do was this 28-day challenge gifted to myself for Christmas. And in January, do a 28-day challenge to lose a bit of weight. As simple as that. There was no other reason. A couple of years before, I'd done Veganuary. Do you know why I did Veganuary, Janet? Was to quit Haribo. So Haribo are sweetie jelly.
Okay.
And they're made up of gelatin, it's an animal product. So I did Veganuary because I wanted to quit Haribo. That then led me to a different lifestyle when it came to my eating. So the simple act of doing Veganuary, quit Haribo, led to a completely different nutritional direction that I now follow. I did 1 year no beers 28-day challenge for one simple reason, and that was to lose weight. And it completely changed my life.
Was it difficult?
Horrendously full. Hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I started the 28-day challenge to lose weight with the assumption that I'd fail every single day. This was drinking neve, partying neve, wine o'clock neve. How could she possibly get through the day without wine? An amazing thing happened to me. And that was on the 1st of January, on the first day of my challenge, I failed miserably. And I went for New Year's lunch with friends and I drank a bottle of the cheapest plonk you could get your hands on at lunch. They gave it free with dinner. It was awful. I drank the whole bottle. And I then went to the pub afterwards, down the bar with the friends and continued on. Day one of my challenge. Best thing that ever happened to me. Because I woke up the next day with the usual hangover, nothing extraordinary. But I felt so disgusted with myself. I felt so disappointed. I said, you absolute piece of luck. One day, you couldn't go one day, the first of the year, without drinking. And it was an amazing day because it meant that day I didn't drink and do this.
Yeah.
So that level of disappointment, was that rock bottom? I think it could have been if you want to label it. So it wasn't a rock bottom where I lost everything. It wasn't a rock bottom where I made the worst mistake or hurt somebody or hurt myself. It was a rock bottom of desperate disappointment.
You're listening to a podcast from Tribe Sober.
Yeah, it was a wake-up call, really, wasn't it, Neve? That you couldn't even get through one day without alcohol. You thought, what is going on? Yeah.
Yeah, how bad is that?
Yeah.
So I started the 28-day challenge just to lose a bit of weight with the assumption I'd fail every single day. But I battled on. And I realized at around day 20, about 3 weeks in, that all I was waiting for was day 29.
Yeah, you were white-knuckling it.
Oh, so I could crack open a bottle of wine and I could hear the pop of the cork. And I could feel the warmth as it went down my neck and into my belly. All that, I was dying for it. And that made me realize, this is not good. This is not the type of relationship you should have with alcohol. Now, I dug deep. I read, I listened to podcasts. I learned about what alcohol was. I didn't know what alcohol was before. I thought it was red wine. I didn't realize it was ethanol and it was a poison and it was a toxin and it was a killer. And I suppose somewhere the knowledge must have been tucked away in some dark crevice of my brain. But I wasn't acknowledging any of that. I dug deep and I learned and I read. And I gave myself the knowledge that was going to make it more difficult to drink again. And I would certainly suggest anybody starting out does the same. Pick up a book, understand what it is that you're doing to yourself, understand what alcohol is, what the components are, what it's all about. Read the list of 60 typical diseases that you'll get, or the likelihood that you'll get them. Understand that it's the reason you have anxiety, and it is the reason getting a sugar crash in the middle of the night, waking up and then being hit with anxious thoughts and you can't go back asleep. Don't deny it anymore. And if you give yourself the knowledge and arm yourself with knowledge, if you're super smart, you can read science, Arctic or more heavy medical.
Plenty of them, yeah.
And if you're not super smart like me, you can read really easy, light reading that gives you the knowledge that you need. Listen to good podcasts like this one. Understand you're not alone. Knowledge is power. And
once we really understand what we're doing to our bodies and our brains, our desire for it diminishes and it all gets a bit easier, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The thing that I found was that I needed to do this reading sober.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of the knowledge would have sunk in if I was drinking wine every day. So it was great to have those 28 days to feel the clarity come slowly every day. The clarity is something I like to talk about because for me, I've found it very overpowering and very overwhelming. My senses heightened, colors became brighter, conversations became way more easier to follow, which meant I was taking in a lot more information. Sounds were clearer, things were crisper, flavors were more beautiful and joyous in the mouth. But that's huge and it's exhausting. And that's why it was hard every day not to reach for a bottle of wine to calm all that down, to dull it down.
Yeah.
Because life is very bright and colorful. And I hadn't been experiencing that.
I think that's probably why sometimes we describe a glass of wine as taking the edge off, because it dampens it down a little bit, doesn't it, what we're going through?
Yeah, for sure. Especially when you start to comprehend everything.
Yeah.
From the simplest thing to your children's emotions, to their struggle with their maths homework, to how nature actually feels again around you.
Yes.
To the big things, the politics and the things that are going on in the news, and your comprehension becomes huge again. And that's really powerful and overwhelming. And I did find that difficult, but I just went on. So at about 21 days, with the realization that all I wanted to do was still drink wine, I decided to go for 90 days. Again, assuming that I would say I would never do this because I still had not extricated myself from the identity of the wine drinking person. And they talk about the moment when you have the realization or the enlightenment where you realize that maybe you could live like this. And I was case study. I was around about 60 days and I was, wow, this is so good. Could it be something I could do? Could I be this person? And I decided to go for a year.
Interesting. Yeah. They say, don't they, that after 66 days, you've built a new neural pathway. So maybe that's related to your 60-day feeling of, I can do this, because it gets easier.
In fact, if I went back through my journal and looked closely, it might have been day 66.
Yes, interesting.
But yeah, it is. And that's over 4 years ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Forever vigilant, forever cautious, never take it for granted, never say never, because I think that is probably one of the most powerful uses of language you could ever use, is to say, I will never drink again. I know how amazingly addictive it is, and I know how powerful it is. I have been through grief. I've been through pandemic. I've been through various situations and I have not reached for a drink, but still I remain cautious. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have to be vigilant. Did you ever try to moderate or set those rules around, oh, I won't drink on a Tuesday and a Wednesday?
I probably set those rules every Monday morning.
Yeah.
And they were ignored by 6 p.m. on the Monday.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was every Monday. I probably said to myself, I'm going on a diet today and I'm going to not drink today.
Yeah. That's exhausting, isn't it, when we fall off every Monday? And then it's so bad for our self-esteem as well. We start to think, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just do it like everybody else does? Why do I have to go over the top every time?
Yeah, it's not good for your self-esteem because we are strong, incredible beings. We are wonderful and we deserve the best self-esteem, the best sense of self-confidence. But we can't have that if we're drinking because it eats all of that. It devours it.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling meh or stagnant or tired or sad, look at your drinking because it's probably the likelihood is that it's what's doing it to you.
Yeah.
So no, moderation for me, it never crossed my mind. I was an all or nothing. I always have been.
We all are.
Yeah. Moderation for me now can't be part of my vocabulary. I've seen so many people attempt it and so many people go back to where they were at, if not worse.
Yeah.
I know there are programs out there, funnily enough, who offer a moderation program. But I personally don't see the point in that because once you understand what alcohol is and how nasty it is, and how bad for you it is. Why would you want to moderate it? Why would you want to imbibe at all? Why would you want to indulge? Having said that, I sound really judgy and preachy, and that's not where I want
to. Oh, no.
I don't want to sound like that. I have lots of friends who drink, and they drink moderately, and they're good at it. And chances are they'll have incredible health. But I think with the knowledge I have now, I don't want to moderate, and that's my take on it, my approach to it.
Mine too. Can I just ask you how you coped with your pregnancies?
I drank through my pregnancies.
Did you?
Wow. I did. I had red wine because I was very clever and I researched it. And I found that European websites supported red wine.
Wow.
I made sure that I didn't look at any American websites because they absolutely forbid it. So I just didn't go there. I made sure that I looked at websites that had doctors who said, it's okay to have a glass or two of white, red wine a day. It's okay to have Guinness to make sure that you keep your iron levels up. So I was smart. I was very tactical when it came to drinking in my pregnancies.
Yeah. Confirmation bias, they call that, don't they?
If you want to find the knowledge that suits you.
You always can.
You can, absolutely. And I decreased my level of drinking, obviously, but it was there and it was pretty much daily and persist. And again, living in Spain, I sold myself the idea that it was acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was I deceiving myself? I don't know. Was this a myth? I'm not sure. But this was what I told myself.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Guinness because I heard in the UK in the 1950s, they had a whole advertising campaign aimed at pregnant women. Saying this will be good for your baby.
Yeah, the iron and it's good for your body. Maybe one is. I don't know. I'm not sure how bad one is, but I'm not proud of the fact that I drank through my pregnancies.
So you decided to go for 100 days, 6 months. Was it okay that first year of sobriety for you or did you have ups and downs and were you tempted to go back?
I think after the 60 days and I had a realization that this could be something that would serve me better in life, it was like I felt bionic. I felt so strong and so bright and so buoyant and I embraced all the new learning. I was, like I say, cautious and vigilant every single day. I started to eat better. I started to sleep. This was the best gift I could have given myself.
Yeah.
I started to be able to read. I hadn't been able to read. I fell asleep if I picked up a book or I couldn't concentrate on get through a paragraph. I started to become bitter, thinner. I lost 19 kilos.
Wow.
So yeah, the reason I gave up was to lose weight. That worked. I looked better. I liked looking in the mirror again and my eyes were brighter. People were commenting on how well I looked. Mm-hmm. It was never easy. Even in the first year, it was still difficult to resist and constantly remind yourself not to drink because it wasn't yet a habit. It takes a long time, beats the habit of drinking when it's so part of your culture and your lifestyle and your day. But the good really started to outweigh the bad.
Yeah.
And again, fueling myself with knowledge And the reasons that I shouldn't drink was excellent, gave me excellent motivation to keep going.
And I think when those benefits start coming in and you feel amazing, we say Tribe Sober that sobriety is a superpower. So when you said you bionic woman, that made me think of that. But yeah, the more benefits that come in, and we do have the clarity and the energy to think, maybe I need to change my eating plan, and am I doing enough exercise, and do I need to get more interest? Your whole life begins to change and evolve.
You become somewhat insatiable.
Yeah.
Because you realize you've wasted a lot of time and energy, and you become insatiable to live life to its absolute fullest, because you start to realize how much it has to give.
Yeah.
Because when you were living before, it was somewhat just a survival mode almost, getting through the day. It sounds very dramatic, I know, but when you come out the other side and you start to feel these emotions, it does feel extremely powerful and empowering. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's life changing, that's for sure. I'm sure it'll be hard for you to pick on three, but tell me three top benefits of sobriety for you.
There are so many, aren't there?
Yeah.
I often say that I walked my way well. So this might be a long answer to your question, but the main gift that stopping drinking gave me was for me to fall back in love with walking and hiking and the outdoors. When I realized that I had 2 to 3 hours, if not more, extra every day, because I wasn't drinking anymore, I needed to fill those gaps. So I did all the typical things. I decluttered all the drawers. I cleaned the house from top to bottom. I was able to do homework with the kids that previously I wouldn't have the patience for. I achieved a lot, got my paperwork in order. I still had extra time. It was like I won the time lottery. So I started walking and going for long walks. And very early on, I set myself the challenge of filling my days with a 10-kilometer walk every day. So I distracted myself from the fact that I wasn't drinking. Instead of taking something away, I was giving myself something. I was giving myself movement, exercise, connection with nature. So the most beautiful thing that came from my alcohol-free journey was my gift of walking. That's now what I do as a business. I'm a life coach. I use walking to help people re-embrace themselves and life. And it's how I connect with people. I don't go down the pub anymore and sit in the bar anymore. I go out walking with my friends. I talk with my friends as we move. I have walking groups. So that's one of the huge, amazing benefits. I think for somebody else, it might be they rediscover yoga. They might rediscover dance. They might rediscover running. All of these things they thought they weren't capable of. Yes, you are, if you stop drinking. The second thing, and the most obvious thing, I suppose, is my relationship with my husband and my children. Without doubt, we're in a different place. We're in a different world.
Has your husband given up?
My husband gave up as well.
Yeah. I've seen that so many times.
People, truly blessed.
Yeah.
Because if he had not given up, I presume, maybe I assume wrong, but I presume we wouldn't be married anymore.
Mm.
Because he was a heavy drinker too. It was what we did. It's how we met.
Yeah.
We met in a bar. We dated in bars. Everything was around alcohol. So it was very important that we both went on this journey together. We gave up at round about the same time, but we had very separate journeys. I needed to do all the reading, do all the learning, get online in certain communities. I needed that. He just went from black to white overnight.
Yeah, I've noticed that often happens with the guys, whereas the women are so good at sharing and connecting, but often guys don't need the collaboration that we do. So it's interesting. But
yeah,
whatever approach works, that's great.
I think it was probably after about 6 months that we were only able to really broach the subject of it. It was a very touchy subject. Mm-hmm. I stopped and he stopped maybe 6 weeks later. I saw alcohol-free beer appear in the fridge. But our marriage was in a very bad place.
Yeah.
So we weren't really talking about much other than the logistics of managing the children.
Yeah.
So we weren't going to start talking about our emotions around alcohol all of a sudden. That would have been just a bridge too far. It was only about 6 months later that we start to very tentatively start talking about our alcohol journeys. And I was much more vocal about it than he was. He didn't really need to talk too much.
Okay. Yeah. So that's two, connection. What, number three?
So I've got my walking, I've got my family and my health.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Look at you. You look absolutely amazing.
I feel great. I'm much more conscious about what I eat and what I put into my body. I feel fit. I lost the weight that I was desperate to lose. I'm climbing mountains. I'm fulfilling physical challenges. I lead walks. That's what I do for a living. So yeah, my health and my fitness. So much more optimistic about my health.
Yeah.
Every Saturday afternoon, we open up our Tribe Sober Zoom Cafe. It's a safe space where our members can connect, check in, and just shoot the breeze about alcohol-free living. If you'd like to be a guest at the cafe one Saturday, just drop us an email at janet@tribesober.com. That's Janet, J-A-N-E-T, @tribesober.com, and we'll send you an invitation.
So your walking is very interesting. I don't know if you've heard of a guy called Nigel Jones, who's written a book called Walking Back to Happiness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I know Nigel Jones. We studied as coaches together, positive psychology coaching. And of course, we have the joint love of walking.
Yes.
His is 9 k.m. by 9 a.m. And mine is Walk Your Way Well.
Yes. And that's lovely.
Yeah. It's, so we have a similar approach in that we both use walking as a tool in our personal armory and try to introduce it into people's lives as a way to find happiness. Yeah. Nigel's book is Walking Back to Happiness.
Exactly. Yeah. And he talks about his walking as a form of meditation, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, we did a podcast with him. I'll forward it to you. He's lovely.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, well, a lot of people in our community resonated with him a lot, and they loved what he said about identifying as a non-drinker from day one. I don't know if you've heard his take on that, but he says that that was his secret, really. When he stopped drinking, even on day one, he just thought of himself as a non-drinker, and he would research what would a non-drinker do all day. And they would do activities and they would eat healthily. And so he emulated a non-drinker. And I think that's a great approach.
It is. But knowing Nigel, he's a very driven, committed person. Somebody who can get up and walk 9 kilometers by 9 a.m. every day.
In the UK when it's freezing.
I know. And I follow his photos. So you know that his personality is such that he has the drive to be able to do that. I, on the other hand, still struggle with how to class myself. Am I a non-drinker? Am I an ex-drinker? I just on a very long sabbatical. I haven't quite classed myself yet.
Okay.
I still remain very cautious on that. I'm just on the alcohol-free journey.
Yeah,
because I think as well, I discover new things every day. This is the gift that keeps on giving.
Absolutely.
So I haven't quite tagged myself yet as to where I am.
Yeah.
I certainly am now in a position where I can say, I don't drink.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think of myself these days as someone that used to drink a lot and now I don't.
Don't drink. Yeah.
I'm certainly not going to label myself an alcoholic in recovery.
Yeah, Janet. And I think it's important that we don't label ourselves as drinkers, non-drinkers, ex-drinkers, alcoholics, that there is no one term for this.
No.
Every single person is different. Every individual will have a different journey and approach and level of struggle with it. Some people, like my husband, can give up overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
But like me, still need to remain vigilant and cautious because I know that if it was ever to sneak back in, could have a very fast and slippery slope.
Oh, it would. Once we've got that neural pathway in our brain, the drinker's pathway, it never goes away. And that's why people that say, I'm going to moderate now, that's why it always goes pear-shaped. My take on it is that we just have to put our energy into creating an alcohol-free life that we love. Forget trying to moderate, trying to control what is an addictive substance after all. But yeah, I agree with you. It's the gift that keeps on giving. And I don't know if you've heard that statistic. I was told it by a rehab doctor. She said that for every year that we drink, it takes a month of recovery of not drinking. So for me, I drank for 40 years. So I was still really feeling benefits coming in day after day in my fourth year of sobriety.
Yes. I heard a statistic that said to put ourselves back to the cellular point where we were before drinking, it takes 7 years.
7 years. Yeah. They say
full and utter recovery.
Yeah. That's what we can. That's when we reform ourselves, isn't it? Almost.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Because I'm 7 years sober.
But still, you could restart. And it's a dangerous one. Do you know what is fantastic, though? And I love the fact that it's becoming so much more easy for us to not drink and so much more socially acceptable. When I quit drinking in Spain, you could purchase Heineken 00 on the shelf in the supermarket. And that was, I'm not a beer drinker.
Yeah.
What did that do for me? I wasn't going to just start drinking beer all of a sudden because I quit wine. That was ridiculous. So the only thing I was ever able to do was avoid situations with alcohol. Or if I did find myself at a music event, I would have a bottle of 00 beer and I would need it in my hand. It was almost like a little
prop,
a comfort blanket in my hand. Prop, exactly. But now when I go to the supermarket in Spain, and I'm sure it's the same internationally, you have 00 options on basically everything.
Yeah.
There's gin, there's fizzies, there's red wine, there's white wine, and all the beers. There's 00 cider. It's we're just at the beginning of the change.
Yeah.
We are the movement. And I am so excited to be part of that.
We're the trailblazers.
Absolutely. Join the gang, guys.
Yeah. No, more and more people are waking up and realizing that we've been brainwashed, we've been manipulated for decades into thinking that we need to drink to have a happy and normal life, when it's actually the opposite.
Complete contrary.
Yeah.
It doesn't bring happiness and it doesn't complete us at all.
No, it takes away so much more than it ever gives us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So let's talk about your coaching. When did you decide that you wanted to explore coaching?
It happened organically in that there wasn't a decision that I wanted to find a new career. I started on my own personal self-development journey. I quit drinking and all the joys and knowledge that comes with that. And I really dug deep into my own learning. And then Walk Your Way was born. And I just started pontificating about walking to anybody who would listen, about the benefits of walking, about how it's free, it's accessible, it's incredibly good for us. We are born to walk. If you have two legs and they can go one in front of the other, it's there and available. And it's a non-impact sport, et cetera, et cetera. So I just loved talking about walking. And then I heard about a coaching course and I understood that for two reasons it could be beneficial to me. Firstly, because there would be a lot more learning on a personal level about positive psychology, about how to embrace life, how to ignite your motivation, how to not live the stagnant existence that sometimes creeps up on us. So I knew from a personal perspective, it would be a great thing to study. I also knew that it would be beneficial to me because I'd never completed anything academically before. Looking back, I'm certain alcohol had a role to play in that, because every time I attempted anything academically, anytime I went to college, I was drinking heavily. And I'm sure that combined with ADHD, it didn't lend itself well to achieving anything academically. So I thought, I'm of a clear mind now. I have clarity. I can read again. I think it's time to dig into something academic. And I thought, I would like to spread the word. I would like to help people who were like me and had reached a point in their lives where they didn't have any direction anymore. They didn't feel fulfilled. They didn't feel happy. And I would love to be able to give back. So the idea of becoming a coach ticked all those boxes. And I completed my diploma in positive psychology coaching. And I also specialize in the alcohol-free sector. I'm dealing with people who want to give up drinking or have given up drinking, and now they want to embrace life.
Yeah.
They're feeling the clarity and they need to know, well, what's next? What can I do? Can I run a marathon? Can I change career? Can I leave my husband or wife? These things come to mind when you become alcohol free, and you just maybe need somebody to guide you slightly. And ask the right questions and help you find your answers.
There's definitely a point where you say, I'm sober, now what?
Now what?
That's the next question, isn't it? Yeah.
Because you realize there are a plethora of possibilities and opportunities that you may have missed previously and are, that are lying in a way. And which one do you choose?
Exactly.
Sometimes we sign up for a marathon and then we sign up for a Spartan race and then we sign up to do a course because we're so excited because we're alcohol free. And all of a sudden we're in deep overwhelm. So a lot of what my coaching will do is help us manage.
Because when we're sober, we can really connect with who we are and what we want out of our life, can't we? But it takes a little guidance, and that's why the coaching is so valuable. So if someone's listening to this, Niamh, and they know they need to make a change, but they're pretty dependent on alcohol, they can't imagine their life without it, what would you say to them? What's the best way to get started? Because that's what's overwhelming, isn't it? We think, how could I possibly give up drinking? What would my life even look like?
Firstly, I'd like to say, and even though people might not believe me or understand or comprehend what I'm trying to say, is yes, you can. And it is so much better on the other side.
Yeah.
It's immeasurable, the difference that it can make to you. I cannot stress, emphasize, or probably express it in language how I feel now that I live alcohol free. And it may be difficult for you to understand that if you're still drinking, because we're slightly under the weather all of the time.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I want to say, okay? Believe me, it's just so much better and so worth it. And then the other thing I would suggest is to empower yourself with knowledge. Try to learn what alcohol really is and what it really does and how it can harm us in so many ways. Everything from weight gain to the inflammation it causes that leads to cancer, to the early onset dementia, to the depression, anxiety, the liver disease. I don't want to get too heavy, but arm yourself with the knowledge so that when you put the glass of wine or beer or vodka in your mouth, you know what you're doing to yourself.
Yeah.
Because then I think you're being responsible. You're responsible for your life and for the knowledge. So I would certainly say, get your knowledge, listen to these podcasts, listen to other podcasts, read books, whatever ticks your box, whatever you fancy doing. If you're out having a walk, listen to a podcast and arm yourself with knowledge. And then I would say, set yourself a challenge. Don't say to yourself, I'm not going to drink ever again for the rest of my life.
No.
Because my God, is that
overwhelmed?
Oh my God. How could you possibly say that when you're on day one or the week one or month one? That's just way too much to fathom. So I just set yourself a challenge that you think is manageable. Even start with a week.
Yeah.
But possibly 28 days if you can manage it. And don't make it a gimmicky one, dry January. Although I do support dry January, at the end of the dry January, the idea is to go back to drinking on the 1st of February.
Yeah.
Do yourself a challenge with a view to prolonging it.
Yeah, I think it has to be a 100-day challenge or a 66-day challenge, because dry January, it's just too short, especially if you're already thinking about February. But you never really experience any true benefits in a month. And your subconscious is absorbing the fact this sobriety is a bit grim, isn't it? So that all you're doing is the hardest work over and over again if you keep doing those short challenges.
Yes.
But if you can just push through, however hard it is, get to 6 months and your life will be so different.
Your life will change.
Yeah.
It's not going to change in a month. There will be little changes, notable changes, but it's not going to do what it needs to be done in a month. You're very right, Janice. So I would certainly say to people, certainly do the 28 days and if possible, go for 60 or 90.
Yeah.
And within those 28 days, it's a day-by-day process. That's very important to remember. All that you need to do is not drink today.
Yeah.
You don't yet need to worry about your 50th birthday coming up in 3 months' time. You don't need to worry about the wedding in the summer. None of that needs to, you don't need to concern yourself with any of that, because as we all know, it might never happen.
I must tell you a funny story. I was talking to a lady the other day about her giving up and how hard she was contemplating it to be. And she said, oh, it's the little things like worrying about but I can't have a glass of champagne at my daughter's wedding. So I wanted to explore this a bit with her. So I said, well, when's the wedding? And she said, my daughter's only four. But that's how crazy our mind, isn't it? We think, how will
because
it all work?
What one should do at a wedding, one should raise a glass. But the great news is that now you can raise a glass.
Yes, alcohol-free bubbly.
Alcohol-free bubbly in there. It would be nice that maybe somewhere down along the line, we're not required or it's not socially acceptable or expected that we must raise a glass. But if that's what's the done thing, put whatever you want in there that's non-alcoholic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Niamh, if someone's listening to this and they want to get in touch with you, I've seen your Facebook group. That's great.
I'm very active on Facebook.
Yes.
I have a page on Facebook called Walk Your Way. I have a private community on Facebook.
Right.
That you can request to join. And that's just a place where we share good stuff. Hanging out with people who are similar, like-minded, safe space where you can talk about your walking or talk about your drinking or lack thereof.
Thanks so much, Niamh. Let's pull out some key points. Niamh had always been a drinker, socializing with family and friends. In fact, as a teenager, she would go to the pub with her parents. And unsurprisingly, her drinking habits got even more entrenched when she moved to Spain. But she began to notice the negative effects of alcohol, such as lethargy, anxiety, insomnia, and weight gain. But despite these niggling thoughts, she didn't address drinking until a wake-up call came. Her wake-up call was when she started a 28-day challenge. She was doing an alcohol-free challenge because she wanted to lose weight, and she couldn't even get through day one. That's when she realised she'd become dependent. I think that happens to a lot of us. We don't even realise that we've become dependent until we stop, until we take a break. That's why challenges are so good. And that's why so many people are doing our 66-day challenge. They just want to see if they can do it. And if you can get through 66 days without a drink, then that's fantastic. It means you've got a very healthy relationship with alcohol. But if you can't, or if you can't even contemplate the thought, then you really need to make some changes. So in spite of her disastrous day one, Niamh kept working hard at the challenge, and she found it easier as time went on and the benefits came in. She decided to extend it to 100 days and eventually to 6 months. And at day 60, she began to feel significant changes. She began to feel bionic, as she puts it, and keen to embrace new learnings. I think a big secret of Niamh's success was because she accepted that she could never moderate. She realised that she was an all-or-nothing person, like many of us drinkers. Her hard work paid off, and sobriety brought significant benefits, like reclaiming her love for walking, improving her relationships with family, and enhancing her health and fitness. Niamh began to pursue a coaching career so that she could help others to navigate sobriety and embrace their lives. She advises those considering sobriety to arm themselves with knowledge, to set manageable challenges, and to take it day by day. And she also emphasised the transformative effects of long-term sobriety. You heard her talking about the significant changes she was feeling in her mind and her body on day 60. So if you're inspired to sign up for our 66-day challenge, just go to tribesober.com and you'll get online and community support for 66 days. That's quite long enough to build a new neural pathway. So let me finish by reading out a lovely message from our US chat group. The Soberversaries come in thick and fast here at Tribe Sober, and this one is from Sherry, who just hit her first Soberversary. Hi all. My decision to join Tribe Sober almost a year ago was definitely the right thing for me. I'm so proud and humbled to be part of one of the hardest things to do in our society and in life generally. I've not put alcohol in my body now, 2 days shy of a year, and I'm loving it. Was it easy? No. Was it worth it? Oh, yes. There are so many positives to being alcohol-free. Don't ever give up if you're struggling right now. keep trying because you're worth it. You will take back your power and put all that crap and negativity behind you, and you won't look back. Oh, thank you, Cherie, and well done. So if you'd like to join our community and get inspired by awesome people like Cherie, just go to tribesober.com and hit join our tribe. That's it from me. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Ditching the drink is like climbing a mountain. It's hard, it takes courage and grit, and an experienced guide. And that's where we come in. Here at Tribe Sober, we've climbed that mountain, and we know the view from the top is amazing. We've used our experience to put together a unique membership program that will support you all the way. We've got challenges, chat rooms, sober buddies, trackers, and milestone awards, and that's just for starters. So head on over to tribesober.com and check out our membership program. It's the essential resource for anyone looking to ditch the drink and change their life.